Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening.
You can pray with all your might till your knuckles all turn white. You can look the other way, hope it's gone with each new day. You can do your best to hide. You can hold it all inside. You can curse and shake your fist. You can ask, why God, why this? There is peace somewhere, I'm told. There's a fire out in the cold. There are wonders to behold in the dark night of the soul.
In church language, it was called a church council meeting, and that might be insider language for some folks. This was last August. It was, I think, actually August 20th. And it was hot, as it always is in Sacramento, and we gathered upstairs in one of the rooms, 200 and something. And there were maybe 10 of us or 11 that were in the space. And Linda and I had pored over the finances of Central United Methodist Church for a while. And it was hard to look at where we were as a community. And it was time to have not a church council meeting, but a come to Jesus meeting. That's different than a church council meeting. If you've been to a church council meeting, you know what to expect, but a come to Jesus meeting, that's a whole nother thing. And so we gathered upstairs. With come to Jesus meetings, you don't really know what's going to happen. You're just going to put it on the table. And so the 10 of us gathered around a table, and Rosemarie opened us in prayer. And sooner than I wanted to, I wanted to have, you know, like a church council meeting. Could somebody report on a couple things, and could somebody else report on a few things? But Linda Ramirez said, so, and looked at the two of us, and then it was really time. It was time to say something that a lot of folks had known for a long, long time, but it was really hard to say it. For some folks, it was really scary to sit in that space and to hear it. What I didn't expect, and what I think is true for some folks in that space, it was a relief to hear it spoken out loud. See, for a long time, Central United Methodist Church had been operating at a deficit. But we've been gifted, we've been blessed by God over the years with significant financial resources that have happened as people have died and bequested either part of their property or inheritance to the church. And we also took out a loan for $150,000 back when this church was worshiping around 30 people. And it was time to pay the loan back. Actually, it had been time to pay the loan back for a while, and we'd been paying it back with the loan. That's not a good business strategy. Like, Suze Orman would not be happy with us. She would want to sit us down and say, people, this is not going to work. Because it wasn't going to work. See, we were spending about $3,000 more every month than we were bringing in. And you can't keep going when you do that. So this reserve that we had, we could look at the numbers, and in the cloudiness of all of it, we could see that by January, so 2 months ago, we would have spent all the undesignated reserves. And then by June, which we're coming up on June, folks, it was all gone. I don't know that they give credit cards to churches. So I don't know what we were going to do at that place, at that moment, at that time. It's a scary thing. See, death was within sight for us as a people in that space. It's frightening to be authentic, as we've talked about in this worship series, as we're broken open into authenticity. See, most of the time in our lives, myself included, it's far easier to just go along and see what we want to see than it is to see what's really before us or to see what's really within us. It's way more dangerous. It's way scarier. It takes way more trust to slow down and to really give voice to what is real in us and around us. See, the end was near for us, and we spoke that out loud. What was amazing, though, to me, is that around that table sat some really faithful folks who long before, actually for some of them before I was born, they trusted that God had something special in store for this little motley crew of a church. And they trusted in it in the most deep, authentic way that you can imagine. See, death was imminent. The cliff was really close. The numbers didn't add up. And somehow they looked at it and they said, we're going to go forward in God's love. See, they remembered that for the followers of Jesus, the end is a beginning. And we're getting really close to that end. In this space, as a worldwide church, we move towards it this week. In April of 1850, a few people gathered together. They actually rented a hall in downtown Sacramento. This was 6 months before California was even a state. One of the people was a pastor. He was a Methodist pastor from the South. He was from Mississippi. And he came here by boat. I don't quite know how that actually worked, but he came here by boat, and then he journeyed over here to Sacramento. And he gathered a couple of folks together in a rented downtown hallway. And they started to dream about what it might be like to root their lives in grace and to grow in faith and to reach in love. They didn't use that exact language, but that's what they longed to do. And this community was starting to rise all around them. And so right from the beginning, this Southern Methodist guy found another Methodist from the North. We were the fourth church to be started in Sacramento, the fourth one. One of the other four was already a Methodist church as well. So it's kind of weird when you drive by now or you walk up H Street and you see like a handful of Methodist churches all around. The first four churches in Sacramento were Methodist. This pastor from the North, he had already set up and he had a little space that was going. So he made a bunk for this pastor from the South and said, why don't you just come here, sleep here, make this your office. His actual quote was, in 1850, there was 1 inch that separated the South and the North in Methodist circles. 1 inch because they had a partition between their bunks. And so the first pastor that started what became this church started to get names from this other pastor who'd been here for just a little while. He said, well, these are all folks who've come up from the South. Here they are. Why don't you find them, connect with them? And so they did that. This early pastor, the founding pastor, within 9 months, he started to get sick. So he headed back home. See, he had sacrificed so much. His body was at its literal end. And he died not long after he returned home to the South. See, ours is a story of sacrifice over and over and over again. About that same time, cholera started to break out around Sacramento. They'd been going for 9 months. They're feeling pretty good. At that moment, almost the entire city was decimated. So a year later, folks started to come back into Sacramento. And when they did, they found that Asbury Chapel, the building that they had built, they found it totally just dust. Doors closed up, no pastor, no one around. So there was a circuit rider who came there. And he lasted all of, according to the books, maybe 6 or 8 weeks. And then he decided that he needed more money than what was coming in, and he hit the road. See, sometimes sacrifice and discipleship is too much for most of us. David Shear, in a song, who was here with us in worship a couple weeks ago, and we'll sing some of his worship, his music in, at Easter as well, he has a song called Cost of Discipleship, and he opens it by quoting Kierkegaard. And Kierkegaard says something like, Christianity might just be the way to go. We don't actually know because no one's ever really followed it. See, if you actually follow it, it takes you to hard places, places you don't want to go, places that are scary, places that demand too much from us. And so most of us are like that young circuit rider. I've got good 6, 8 weeks and peace. Good luck. I'm on my way. There was another preacher who came in at that same time, and there were no records. It was like a good Methodist church. There were no records anywhere. So he had no idea if there were still folks from this church that were even around or if they'd resettled back in. What he finally was able to do was bring together and to connect with 14 people. And he started to gather those 14 folks together, and they reclaimed, and I imagine, it's not really in the records, but I imagine they dusted off that little sanctuary, 34 feet by 60 feet, 7th Street, between J and K. That's where they were. They faced west. So they dusted that off, and they must have started to gather there for both worship and for class meetings to watch over each other in love. They started to do just that, and the community started to grow a little bit. And they discerned that they needed to build a little bit bigger space right there. Asbury Chapel was going to be raised, and it was going to grow. But then what they realized is, actually, no, we still owe $2,550 on the property. So not only will we not be growing this space, but they're going to take it away from us in 1 week if we don't come up with the $2,500-some-odd that we owe them. Uh-oh. That was, I imagine, they don't leave write this in the story either, but I think that was their come to Jesus meeting. They were sitting upstairs in room 200 and something, and they said, uh-oh, 1 week. 1 week. And they looked at that space, and one person, Mr. Stovall, he gave $1,600. This is $1,850. And then he borrowed, but that wasn't enough. That must have been every penny he had, I imagine. Because then he borrowed 950 more from friends, I'm told at 5% interest a month. That's not a good investment either. Mark, who's our finance chair, is thinking that wouldn't be a good idea. That's why you're our finance chair, Mark. But they needed that $950, and so they trusted that God was doing something big in that little ragtag group of folks back in the day. They gathered that money, and they paid off that debt, and within 6 months, the entire city, 7/8 is what the history books say, of Sacramento was burned to the ground in literal ashes. That was everything he had. And now he owes his friend $950, all ashes. And they looked at that space, and out of those ashes started to rise a church. They started to call that church Seventh Street Church. And then they called it Seventh Street Methodist Church. And the name outside said Asbury Chapel. So it was one church, lots of names. Class meetings happened on Tuesday nights. Every Tuesday, folks came together to watch over each other in love. Those first followers included medical doctors, young moms, widows, a few farmers, and a lawyer or two. If they had a lot of social workers, it would have been us today. There was a woman who I was particularly struck by. Her name is Mary Curtis Anderson. She was the second woman appointed to hold a church office back in the 1850s. And she was 13 when she was married for the first time. And then she was widowed before she was out of her teens. She followed that little church with many names as it moved from one place to another, all the way through until she was in her 90s and she passed away. A long life of discipleship, Mary Curtis Anderson. Some of the most prophetic expressions of generosity that the Methodist Church around the world has ever known were birthed out of this place. There is a woman, some of you might know her name, Lizzie Snyder Glide. For longtime Methodists, for folks that care about justice, Glide is something that we've heard about. Glide is a church that's over in San Francisco, and it literally has transformed San Francisco by the way in which it's in prophetic ministry with the poor. Do you know where Glide got started? She was from here. And she saw that there was no Methodist presence over there in the Tenderloin of San Francisco, so she started one. Somebody who was sitting in a pew, just like the person sitting next to you, went over there and changed the world. She also started Mary Elizabeth Inn in that space as well. She became the largest donor to world mission the Methodist Church has ever known as a woman. And she came right out of these old pews, this space. We're going to share more about her story in not too long. Those class meetings, the folks that gathered on Tuesdays, they continued all the way through the 19th century. And Anthony and our musicians might like to know that back in the 1860s, one of the first missions, one of the first ways this church reached out to the people around it, they started a music school in this space. And they started to open up their doors, that 30 by 60 space downtown. They started to open it up during the week for kids to come for music school. I had missed this part, but back in the day, there were no public schools. So the first schools that got started in Sacramento, they got started out of our pastor's little office space, that bunk. They moved the bed out of the way, and they started to teach two little girls. And then they started to teach children all around them in this what was becoming a really crowded mining town. All that stuff was happening out of this space as folks were experiencing calls to discipleship that led them out into the streets to be in solidarity with these kids whose parents were off working, who had no way to be educated. That's incredible generosity. That's deep trust. And all of it is sacrifice. They had grown so much, 360 folks. We think sometimes we don't know what to do with the space around here. 360 members were gathering in this space, 34 by 60 some odd feet. And so they realized, the trustees, in their infinite wisdom, realized this isn't big enough for us. We're going to need a new building. So they commissioned the trustees to go find one, and they did. They found a building space that was at 15th and J. And my favorite thing is that this was the announcement when they were ready to move there. Remember the name of the church? Seventh Street Methodist Church. This is in the SACB. Actually, it was called the Union Paper before that. The Seventh Street Methodist Church will meet at 15th and J. Did you get that? The Seventh Street Methodist Church is going to meet at 15th Street and J at 10 a.m. for Bible study and then at 11 a.m. for preaching. So come on out to the Seventh Street Church at 15th Street. We think the table at Central gets confusing sometimes. They couldn't even get the street name correct when they were trying to publicize. As a church launch, that's not the right way to go. Like, let's get our publicity out with the wrong address in our title as we go in that space. They couldn't call themselves, though, First Church because there was another First Church in that space. That's when they started, when they had moved. What, are you going to be 7th Street Methodist Church at 15th and J for the rest of your life? No, that's where we came to Central. Central Methodist Church, originally, is the name that they took on in that space. One of my favorite stories at that moment, see, they had to sell their property at 7th Street to move out to 15th. That wasn't going to happen. They tried it for about 2 years. And then what happened was, a man who had never been in worship before, his wife was a devout Methodist. She'd been there every week, and in all those class meetings, she was a faithful disciple in the Methodist community. He was a devout Catholic, just as devout as she was. He signed the papers to purchase the 7th Street property from the church, and then in his will, he gifted it back to the Methodist church. So sometimes the most shocking expressions of generosity happen way outside the walls of our space by folks that we aren't sure if we can sit next to in the pews. So that church was an old, evolving church. It had a lot of names, been in several locations, and it kept moving. And I've shared a piece of this story in the past, but I want to share it again. In 1922, Reverend E.E. Wall, he was known for borrowing Fords. It was one Ford. One of his members must have had a Ford. So he borrowed it to go do pastoral care visits, to go way out to the suburbs where the people had all moved. See, back in the day, they had all lived at 15th and J. But he couldn't visit them anymore because they lived out in the suburbs so far away. So he drove that Ford out here. And that's how we came upon 53rd and H Street as a space for what then became later in the 60s, Central United Methodist Church. All of those meetings kept going as we moved out here. They called that church at 15th and J, they called it the Old Victorian. And much like Joan, who is a poet and a teacher, I'll call you a poet myself, Joan. You might just describe yourself as a teacher. Joan shared some beautiful poetry that arose within her out of our worship experience last week that Linda already shared on Facebook with Lorenza Andrade Smith. When the community was moving out here, this was the poem that was, or a piece of the poem that they wrote. Holy walls to the memory of the Victorian lady. Holy walls pulled down to dust to please the future as they must. But gone the halls and rooms and places, once a child's Sabbath spaces. See, to experience new life out where the people were, they literally had to move through ashes as that building came tumbling down. The Jesus story would be a lot easier for us if it didn't go from Good Friday to Easter. If it just went straight to Easter. A lot of expressions of Christianity just want to live right there. But God calls us through the dark night of the soul in that way. On Palm Sunday in 1949, see, it took 20 years, the Depression happened, for them actually to move all the way out here. But in 1949 on Palm Sunday, that's when the church met out here for the very first time. And it was outside under the trees right here. The eucalyptus tree is what Rosemary's saying right here. And they gathered in the sanctuary in the social hall for 14 years. That was where they met. That's why we have so many chairs. I love it.
Yeah. We had just folding chairs.
The folding chairs got folks through for 14 years. That's why we have so many of them. So you can know when you're sitting over there in a folding chair, that's a folding chair that folks worshiped God in for a long, long time in that space. When we gathered upstairs, we stood in a long line of faithful folks who've been broken open before us. Some among us knew in the depths of their hearts, our hearts, that something was in store. God has something in store for this little church. See, God's already been breaking this people open into discipleship and trust, into solidarity and authenticity, into generosity and to sacrifice. And today, as we've woven the table and central into one community of faith, standing in this deep and evolving tradition, we can celebrate so many different things. The class meetings of old, the ones they had on Tuesday nights, they died. They died in the middle of the 20th century. And they're being resurrected as kitchen tables. Some that met already this morning, and some that'll meet right after worship, and others that'll meet throughout the week in various places. The Sunday school that they started to reach out to all those children, I think when we're honest with ourselves, it was on the brink of death as well. And it's being resurrected with our children right now in godly play as they're wondering about how God is moving in their lives. Asbury Chapel, it's not there anymore. 7th Street Church, 7th Street Methodist Church, Central Methodist, Central United Methodist, the table at Central United Methodist. Names come and names go. Buildings come, buildings go. But today we can look around and we can say that instead of depleting all of those reserve funds and closing our doors up in June, we've actually grown our budget to a place that we're moving toward viability. We actually receive a grant from the annual conference, and we'll do that for 2 more years, but we're on pace to far exceed the amount that they thought we'd be bringing in at this point. The reserve fund that we thought would go from $30,000 to zero is up around $50,000. Those are some remarkable ways that when you have the courage and when God holds you in grace to sit around a table and to authentically look at what is, you move in and through that to new life. That's the story of the church. It's the story that Jesus calls us to. That Reverend Wall, the guy who came out here in his Ford in 1922, he said it like this: no church can live within its doors. A church must grow or die. There's no such thing as a static state in the kingdom of God. It's like the tagline. We thought we came up with the evolution of church. We thought that was really creative, but he did in 1922. That's what he was saying, the evolution of church. People have been saying it for a long time. We're doing nothing new, folks.
I know.
But we're rooting our lives in a way that has been handed to us and in which God holds us. And so God will continue to write this story in our hearts and in the hearts of this community. The psalm that Linda and Ashley shared together as we gathered for worship. This is a song the ancient Jewish community would have shared together as they entered the temple. You could hear it in the words. It's like a call and response in the way that we did it. The temple was a place, I think of the temple today and I think of the church. It's a mile from where I live. We could walk right up there. In their day, they went to the temple at best 3 times a year and they made pilgrimage to get there. So to prepare for worship, to go into the temple, was a sacred, sacred moment. It happened maybe 3 times a year that they'd make that pilgrimage. I know I'm going long, but I want to share this story. Sarah and I took a class called Controversial Biblical Interpretation when I was in college. And Dale Miller, he turned my world upside down in a variety of ways. One of the ways that he turned my world upside down was he talked about the way he prayed. And he prays 2x a year. And I thought, well, that's not very faithful. You're a Baptist pastor? And the way, it's true. That's what I thought. The way he prayed was this. He said, I spend 6 months or so, sometimes 8 months, getting ready to pray. Every day, I'm getting ready to pray to God. And then when it's time, I'll block off a couple days, sometimes a week, and I'll go off to be alone with God in prayer. And I don't know how long it's going to take. So I let everybody know. And I thought, ooh, never done that. But the way he described it to me as a 20-year-old college student was, it's like if you were going to go talk to the President of the United States about all the things that you long for and the things that you hope for, are you just going to wing it? You're just going to show up, knock, knock. No, you're going to spend some time getting ready. And that's what that ancient Jewish community was doing. They slowed down before they went into the temple with the words that we read this morning. They came to the temple 3 times a year, and one of those was for the Passover. The Passover, which we're in right now, we're entering into. The Passover is a time in which the Jewish people remember that God brought them out of slavery in Egypt. God brought them to freedom. So they gather in the temple from all over the place to remember whose they are and to remember who they are. That's what the temple does for them. I think that when Jesus was coming to get ready to go to that temple, it might have been in his heart, in his mind, this psalm that we read this morning. He might have been thinking about it as he was preparing to enter the temple. And I also want to say that our churches all over the place are going to wave palm branches. We're going to swing them around, and it's like a parade. That's fine. Sometimes that's a beautiful way to mark this moment, but that's not at all what Jesus was doing. We're talking radical protest, folks. This is way more like the Occupy movement in Jesus' day than it is like today, let's wave palm branches inside the safety of a church. I don't care if you like the Occupy movement or not, but it's controversial, and so was Jesus. See, he was mocking the folks that were there, saying, you think you're going to ride in on your Roman imperial stallions? I'll take the donkey. And the people around him did not know what to do. We often don't know what to do when people turn things upside down on us in those ways. But that's exactly what Jesus was doing. See, if God is Lord, then the Roman Empire is not. And so those folks would have been gathering on Palm Sunday. Those Jewish followers of Jesus, they were longing for refuge in God. The priests and the people in the temple, they would have called back and forth, "Open to us the gates of righteousness." And then, "The righteous shall enter through it." They call and respond as they move into that space. See, the physical movement begins outside the temple, and as they process in, they make their way toward the altar. The whole movement is about remembering that God has saved their people in the past and trusting that God will save them again. It's a spiritual movement. It is the story of Jesus. See, we know that as Jesus was standing outside of that space, his followers would come to see him as the temple. He is the place where God is most fully alive in the world. His body is the sacred place where God comes to us. And as the temple was destroyed and rose, the body of Jesus will die and rise as well. So this week, we begin a journey into Holy Week. And so we open, I hope it's this one. With the palms, we see the passion, and this week we begin a journey with Jesus in his story of passion. Passion is a word for suffering. It's the place that so many of us want to turn away from. It's the thing that when we met upstairs in room 200 and whatever and said, "This is the end," no one wants to look at that. It's the thing that happened when they put up $2,500 and they built this new building downtown, and then a few months later it burned to ashes. That's the passion. To get through to the other side, you have to walk in the middle of it. And that's our invitation for you, for all of us this week. On Maundy Thursday, we'll gather at 7 o'clock in the social hall, and we'll remember that last meal in which Jesus broke bread with his friends. And he's forsaken at the table. We'll remember that Jesus is forsaken in the garden. And then on Friday, we'll hear and touch the story of Jesus being forsaken on the cross, crying out, my God, why have you forsaken me?" This is no individual endeavor. We've been lifting up the stories of individuals over the last few weeks, but all of these individuals come together as God's people, as one community, and we who seek to follow God in the ways of Jesus do so in the vulnerability of community, a community that calls us into solidarity because we worship a God who comes to us in solidarity, in life, in death, and in resurrection. God's passion, God's suffering is our story, and may that story unfold in our lives as we unfold in God's love.